It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Ross Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. 1 week away from the 2017 NFL Draft, which will spark a whole new set of conversations among us fantasy football studs. He's the real stud. Evan Silva, the master of all he oversees at rotoworld.com, the best website out there for your fantasy football consumption. Give him a follow on Twitter. You will not regret it. At Evan Silva. Even his retweets are awesome. I'm a former NFL offensive lineman. Got a bunch of different media gigs. Ross Tucker. My Twitter handle is at Ross Tucker NFL. We're presented today by those studs over at BetDSI.com. Love those guys. If you want to bet on the NBA or NHL playoffs or Major League Baseball or even on the draft, you can bet on the draft. It's a fun thing to bet on. Just go to BetDSI.com. Use the code Tucker15 for $15 free, which, by the way, is also just one of the sponsors you can take advantage of to make sure you are in the May MFL 10 draft. We wrapped up the April MFL 10 draft. It was awesome. We got a whole new one in May. It's $10 free. It's your chance to go against Evan and I, and we will be picking the four final contestants next week. So again, it's not too late to enter the May MFL 10 draft. Just send me any sponsor confirmation over at Ross at RossTucker.com. Today's winners, today's contestants, Dan Begley, who's also a Tuckhead over at Tuckheads.com. So good for you, Dan. David Pettyjohn, a.k.a. PJ, Aaron Leeper, and Norm Fazekas. Fellas, come on down. You four don't know what you just signed up for. Evan and I are going to dominate you come early May. Speaking of domination, Evan, I would say at this point you might be undefeated or at least close to it. There was one guy that was a little weird, I remember, but your guests have been absolutely fantastic. Today, you've got a guy named Mike Beers. I like him already. Tell me about this guy.
I would rather hear you tell me about the one guy that was weird.
I can't remember which guy it was. It was just a guy that, I don't know, he tried to like make a bunch of jokes that weren't funny. I can't remember who it was. He was a nice guy. Just I can't say you're undefeated with that guy. He was that was more of a tie. I don't know if we won that day or not.
Mike Beers, he's done a bunch of research on how to construct your team in MFL 10. You know, we wonder how many quarterbacks should we take, how many running backs should we take, how many wide receivers, how many tight ends, how many defenses. You know, Mike, I think he would not say that he has cracked the code, but he's probably come closest. And he's also had a bunch of different ideas on ways to be a little bit different in MFL 10s. I mean, MFL 10s, we only get 20 rounds. You know, there's a maximum on investments that we can make in these players, in these drafts. So what are ways that we can be different from our competition? And that will be that topic will be the first thing that we discuss in this interview.
All right. Well, let's get to it.
Big Eater of the Week.
As promised and as usual, very excited about today's guest. And I thought about trying to stay mature because I'm sure he gets questions about his last name all the time. And he's heard them all. And there's no joke you can say that he hasn't heard. But I'm just not that mature. I can't do it. I have to ask him about it. The guy's name is Mike Beers. So, Mike, please just tell me that nobody calls you Mike and everybody calls you Beers.
Oh, I'm not going to disappoint you. I've been called Beers since, probably first grade. So, yeah, I got a built-in nickname.
It's amazing. I mean, there's a million Mikes out there, but to have a buddy that you can call Beers, That's incredible. I mean, what is the how'd you get that? I was about to say, how'd you get that last name?
I didn't have a whole lot to do with that part, I guess. I don't know.
No, it's awesome. I love it. Now, what about the Twitter handle @BeersWater?
Yeah, that's actually a reference to a job. One of my first jobs out of college was at a hedge fund with a similar name. I probably not supposed to say the actual name, but it's a play on that. So.
Oh, I got it. All right. So give me your background. We always like when Evan brings on another expert, I always like to get the background on guys. So where are you from and kind of how did you become worthy in Evan's mind of being on the Fantasy Feast podcast?
Well, I'm never going to understand how I became worthy, but I live in Connecticut. I've got a family with three kids and my wife here. And my background's in finance. So up until about 9 months ago, I was working in hedge funds, studied economics in college and went right into finance and ended up doing hedge fund research, trying to evaluate hedge funds, pick the best ones. It ended up being very similar to fantasy football, actually, trying to find the best players and build a portfolio out of them. So that's what I've been doing for about 8 years. And recently I stepped back from that and I'm trying to move into tech, software programming, stuff like that. And I've been fooling around with this fantasy football stuff in the meantime. So it's given me a lot of time to work on that. It's been fun.
I love it. What school did you go to, Beers?
I went to Dartmouth up in New Hampshire.
Oh, you couldn't get into Princeton, huh?
Yeah, that's how it goes, right?
No, that's just my running line. Guess what, Beers? I wouldn't have got into Dartmouth without football. So you're smarter than I am, my man. So tell us exactly what you're doing on the fantasy football end of it. I know you at times write for RotoViz. What all you got going on that people can check you out at?
Sure. Yeah. A couple years ago, I wrote my first article for RotoViz, and what kind of caught their eye was these charts that I was making. If anyone wants to check out #chartsoncharts on Twitter, you'll see a lot of this, very colorful illustrations of football players' weekly performance and variance. And, it fit very nicely with best ball, which, what we're going to talk about today. Looking for the players who are the boom bust kind of guys versus the high floor kind of guys. And that was just sort of a random idea I had that turned into a series of articles for RotoViz. I've been playing fantasy football though for, over a decade since high school, and really just got more into the analytical side of it probably, 4 or 5 years ago. I like to win, I had a particular set of skills that would help me out there, so I dove in.
Awesome. Well, I may have a question or two for you at the end, but I know Evan has a bunch for you, so I like to usually sit back and listen and allow Evan to pick your brain and then see if Evan asks the question or two that I was going to ask. He probably will. So, Evan, the floor is yours, my friend.
Hey, what's up, Mike? How's it going, man?
It's going great. I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, good. Thanks so much for coming on the show. I've read every single article that you've written since January, and they're excellent. And you're also a really good writer, too. I mean, that stood out to me reading your articles. You can read all of Beer's articles on MFL 10 on rotoviz.com. They are fantastic. What you kind of became popular, I thought, in my mind last year for what was being an innovator and not just a data analyst. Last year, you kind of popularized, although I'm not sure it became especially popular, just because it's like so risky and people don't like to, people are so risk averse when it comes to playing fantasy football, but you came up with the three running back approach in MFL 10s. And, you know, I mean, this is a format where I think people are more comfortable drafting six running backs as opposed to drafting three. And the three running back approach had the highest win rate among any running back roster construction last year. Can you just talk about, like, what is the theory behind the three running back approach? And do you think that it can have success in future years?
Yeah. So, well, first of all, thank you for the kind words on the article. So I'm happy to hear you reading them. But yeah, so you're right in that it wasn't terribly popular last year. It's more popular this year after people have seen that it worked. I mean, they kind of trust me a little more. But the idea behind it was basically after the 2015 season, when we saw, you know, half of the top running backs, you know, from the first few rounds go down to injury or just underperform. And then the idea of the zero RB draft strategy, you know, becoming increasingly popular at the same time, we saw all the top running backs were getting pushed way down the draft boards, right, in ADP. And it was kind of this, you know, maybe the first time ever you could just go into the draft thinking to yourself, all right, I can get three of the top 12 to 15 running backs in the first three rounds if I want to, almost by default. And, you know, given that that was something new, I just wanted to figure out, you know, is that something that we should try to take advantage of, right? Is the market gone too far? You know, we got a new opportunity. Could it lead to, you know, profits? And when I did the work, I found that, you know, given that you only had to start two running backs in these best ball leagues, three was really enough if they were good and if they stayed healthy. And those are both very big ifs, especially coming off of a 2015 season when it seemed like nobody was either of those things. So, you know, it did take some, you know, it was a bit of a leap of faith, but the idea was if you could get three of these really good running backs early on, and then sort of compensate at wide receiver by taking nine of them, which is a lot more than, well, not a lot more, but it's more than people usually do. Sort of the quantity over quality made up for your lack of, you know, stud wide receivers. And if your running back stayed healthy, you had a very good shot at winning. And the idea there was basically these MFL 10s, you know, they're winner take all, right? You know, there's this small second place prize, but really you got to win. And there's no point in hedging, as far as I'm concerned. You know, you need to take a risk, and you can take risk in different ways. But this seemed like the highest, you know, bang for your buck risk that I could find. You know, just betting on these running backs staying healthy and doing what they're supposed to do. And it worked out for the most part. Unfortunately, I didn't make money last year personally, but I've heard from a lot of people who did using that strategy. So that's always nice.
Yeah, it's like the idea of embracing fragility and embracing volatility and, you know, just being a little bit different from the crowd. I think that my basic understanding of how to win in MFL 10s is to, number one, find guys who are going to beat their ADP. You know, you're drafting a wide receiver 59, and if he finishes at, like, wide receiver 28, then, you know, like, that's the sort of thing that I want. Or, you know, last year, like, Matt Ryan, I think, was, like, quarterback 16 or 17. You know, he finishes at quarterback 3 or whatever. Number two is to draft guys who stay healthy. And this is much easier said than done, as is finding ADP beaters. Number three is to perform correct roster construction, which is your specialty. Mike, do you disagree with any of those elements And do you think that there is an element here that I'm missing when it comes to winning at MFL 10s?
No, that sounds right to me. You know, I kind of group the first two together. You know, guys getting injured, it's something that happens every year. And you know, you could call that luck, the health aspect. But if they get injured, they're not going to beat ADP. Certain guys who are injury risks stay healthy, they're going to beat their ADP. And, you know, that's really those first two are the biggest drivers, I think, of your success, right? If you're really good at picking the right players, that you're going to win the most. I say that with my specialty being the other part, which is the smaller part. But the roster construction, like you said, we can control it, and it gives you – You know, on the margin, you have a better shot of winning if you are just following some, you know, basic rules, you know, as you put your team together. You're still, you know, trying to find the ADP beaters and avoid the landmines, but you do it within this construct that, you know, if everybody else is not doing that, then you have a leg up on them, even if you're not the best at, you know, projecting who the best values are going to be, for example. So yeah, I'm on the same page with you in terms of, you know, what drives success in these things.
So you put a lot of time into the optimization of roster construction, and that's really the crux of most of your articles on RotoViz. Can you just touch on the basics of this project that you undertook? What were you hoping to accomplish with the project, and do you think that you were able to accomplish it in any big takeaways that you had from your roster optimization project?
Sure. So I started playing MFL 10s two seasons ago, and there wasn't quite as much content out there. I've read a couple articles on RotoViz about roster construction. And, you know, the leagues also weren't as popular as they are now. I think they've, you know, sort of number of leagues has doubled each of the past 2 years. And it just seemed like, you know, nobody had put a lot of time into this. And, you know, looking at it from my finance angle, it was an inefficient market. You had, you know, not too many people playing it, even fewer people really studying it. And, you know, the picking the best players, that's the same across formats. But the best ball MFL 10, 20 man construction part was something new that I thought hadn't been solved. And, you know, I thought I could get an edge by figuring out. So I took it on as a challenge. It was interesting to me. The goal, what I was trying to accomplish was just finding, you're trying to build a roadmap of, you know, what's the best way to play this game. You know, each draft is going to be different, and you're going to start, you know, with a different set of players each time. But, you know, there's got to be some kind of, you know, right path to follow, or at least best path to follow that gives you a better chance to win. And it's tough because, you know, everything I was seeing was saying, you know, draft this many wide receivers, say it was 7. And I immediately asked the question, well, what if I start my draft with 4 straight wide receivers? Do I still need 7? And nobody was answering that question. So that's what I'm trying to do now. With this project that I just most recently written about, I have started from a complete draft board, 12 teams. They already have all their picks filled in, but it's kind of a mess from a roster construction standpoint. All their picks were in the right order in terms of the best running back was picked before the second best running back and so on. But, you know, some teams started out with 4 quarterbacks, a couple had 0. And what I did was I had them take turns swapping players. I wrote a computer program trying to make their teams better. I gave them the actual performance of the players on their rosters, and they would know exactly how many points they gained by making a trade for another player later in the draft. And the idea was this would, you know, in the end, we'd end up with what is would be, quote unquote, the right way to draft. If, you know, given thousands of chances to make your team better and make adjustments by changing your positions and where you draft them, you know, I could take a look at those results and see if they tell us anything. And it actually worked out really well. I'm not sure I explained it very well just now, but, you know, it lined up with intuition, right? I think most people realize, or if you read a couple articles, that two or three quarterbacks is probably the way to go in these drafts. And, you know, at the end of my optimization project, every team had two or three quarterbacks. So it sort of lined up with our intuition. And it highlighted some other things that, you know, I thought were pretty interesting in terms of when you want to go with two versus three, which is what my most recent article was about, or, you know, how the positions interact with each other. It's something I've been working on for a long time. And I actually feel like, this is the finish line in terms of, you know, I've got maybe one more article to write on running back and wide receiver, and I'll have my playbook in terms of roster construction, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah, great stuff. So I noticed that in your first optimization article, the ideal construction in that article used nine draft picks at wide receiver. Is that really something that's viable? I mean, I don't think I've ever gone to nine wide receivers. I mean, I've gone to eight a bunch, but I mean, nine is a lot. But at the same time, that forces you into two quarterbacks, and you know you're downsizing in other positions. I mean, have you drafted any teams with nine wide receivers, and do you think that that's really optimal?
So, the study that wound up with nine wide receivers was the three running back strategy, the hyper fragile idea. And I think, you know, in my most recent optimization articles, 7 to 8 has really been the center of the distribution. That's where most of the teams end up. And I think that's most of the time going to be the way to go, 7 or 8. But if you're going with the three running backs and, you know, taking them with your first three picks, then, then 9 definitely is on the table because you've freed up space that people are normally giving to, you know, their fourth, fifth, and sixth running back to take those extra wide receivers. And I think you kind of have to, actually. You need that extra volume, those extra dart throws to make up for the fact that you don't have any stud wide receivers. But sort of more to the point, if you're taking a wide receiver in the first or second round or third round even, you're not going to need 9 wide receivers. I wouldn't go to that many pretty much ever because you're already investing enough in the position. I mean, you got to think about where you're making the picks. I mean, 6 wide receivers all taken in the first 8 rounds is very different from 6 wide receivers taken in the last 8 rounds. And, you know, in a more normal kind of draft where you're not doing the three running back hyper fragile idea, you're probably going to end up on 7 or at most 8. And I have done, you know, I have done the 9 wide receivers, several times actually, but it's always when I'm doing only 3 running backs.
Makes sense. So I like that in your articles, you make it clear that you're big on, trying to figure out where to draft defenses. You know, people maybe take the defenses for granted, but you're big on trying to make sure that you're doing it right at defense. And that's in terms of how many you roster and where you select them. Do you think that there is any sort of lean toward what is better between 2 defenses or 3 defenses? Because I think that most people want to draft 2 defenses. But do you think it's better to draft 3 or 2, or is it just too close to call?
So I'm actually pretty firmly on the side of 3 defenses here. It goes back to, you know, what you were saying, what drives sort of winning in these things, you know, there's finding the ADP beaters and there's roster construction. And with defenses, I mean, you know, some people might be really good at it individually, but as a whole, people are very bad at projecting defenses. You know, the correlation between ADP and where they actually end up in the ranks is very, very low each year. And I personally am not good at it. I just recognize that as something that I'm not able to do. And if that's not part of the equation, that means it's all on roster construction. And I think it's something that's pretty easy to control. You know, you can get enough points out of defense with only two if you pick the right ones. But given that it's very hard to pick the right ones and that I don't want to be spending an early pick on a defense, it's much easier to just go with three. And the third defense is virtually free points. It's almost guaranteed to add to your total at the end of the year over having two. And if we're talking about a 20th round pick, the odds that the wide receiver you take there, or certainly the tight end or running back that you might take there, is going to add to your, you know, starting roster enough times to make a difference are really, really low. So I like to take the high probability, you know, sort of free points on the table. And then I don't have to worry about which defenses I even take. I mean, I'll look at some rankings or I'll have my favorites, but you know, if I know I'm going to take three of them, I'm not going to stress about which ones they are. They're probably going to complement each other well enough, and you know, I'll avoid a bye week zero. And I've looked at you know, more carefully, sort of looking at the combinations of two defenses versus three defenses, and you really add a lot of points by having a third defense just on average. So I really think it's the way to go, except in the case where you already have three quarterbacks and three tight ends. Something I mentioned in my last article where I was looking at these onesie positions, you don't want to give nine spots to quarterback, tight end, and defense. It's just a little too much. You don't leave enough firepower for running back and wide receiver. That would be the one exception for me.
Yeah, I think that, and you kind of alluded to it, like that third defense is actually a high floor pick. I mean, as a 20th round selection or a 19th round selection or whatever, you know, the defense is not going to get hurt. The defense is not going to get cut.
Right.
And you said it. It's pretty much guaranteed points that at the end of the year, it is going to help you score more points. So now this is just getting into, you know, 2017, and we're all kind of guessing. You know, we have our projections, but you know, we're trying to do the best job that we can, and we're hoping that the guys that we like stay healthy and you know, don't get cut, etc. Right. But if you had to guess at some players, first of all, I wanted to make this clear. So one of the things that you looked at, one of the first things that you looked at after last season was win rates generated by specific players. Like David Johnson, of course, had a really high win rate at running back, and what that means is that David Johnson happened to be on, you know, this many, or he was like, I don't know, what was it, like 12% of winning teams. David Johnson was on 12% of winning teams, and you went through every position and looked at what players generated the highest win rates. If you had to guess for 2017, who are some players that you like enough that you think might generate high win rates in 2017 MFL 10s?
Yeah, so this is a really hard question because this is the golden goose. You know, David Johnson, as you mentioned, it was, you know, 26% actually. So one quarter of the teams that that had David Johnson won their leagues outright. So, you know, it was a huge advantage to have him. And, you know, it's the thing I've looked at most is not, you know, it's hard to pick the actual names. So I've looked more at the areas of the draft where you find these big win rate guys. You know, it was kind of unusual last year. David Johnson and, you know, like LeSean McCoy, they were earlier round running backs and had two of the highest win rates last year. That's kind of unusual because normally you'd look sort of mid to late rounds to find the guys who are going to really generate high win rates. That's part of what I like about the stat is it combines both their performance and their cost, right? So if a first round guy performs well, he's not necessarily going to have a high win rate because he was supposed to perform well. So the, you know, the areas I kind of look for the higher win rates are sort of the, or I found a lot, you know, most often are wide receivers that are sort of in the like wide receiver three to four range in ADP. And then some, you know, much later in like the 5 to 6 range, or 6 to 7 range. I'll list some names in a minute, but, and then for running back, I think it's usually guys sort of in the like 8 to 13, 14 round range, where you're going to find, you know, a couple of guys who really jump out. I mean, they were undervalued for whatever reason. They had their great year. You know, it was Devonta Freeman a couple of years ago. You know, guys like that, you know, that are really giving you bang for your buck. Where you won't find them is beyond that, you know, round 15, 16, 17, 18. Running backs kind of disappear at that point, and you really don't have a lot of big successes there. So in terms of guys I actually like, it's really hard. You know, I'm looking at New England running backs. They're all, you know, there's so many of them. They're probably all going to fall into that price range. You know, Blount was one of them last year. You know, that sort of 9 to 13, 14 round. One of them is going to have a high win rate, I think. I just don't know which one. So my approach there is, you know, I'll probably scatter them throughout my portfolio. You know, I won't go real heavy on, you know, Burkhead. I won't go really heavy on James White. But, you know, I'll put them in. Yeah, I'll scatter them throughout my portfolio, and hopefully they'll help, you know, one or two rosters. I want to have that exposure. And then in terms of wide receivers, I'm looking at my my current exposure. I've done 16 drafts so far, and a couple of guys that I've got a lot of exposure to. Adam Thielen is one in particular. Yes. His price is pretty reasonable. You know, he's one of my top exposures. He's just, I see a lot of upside there. You know, he certainly, at, you're getting him as your, you know, fifth or sixth wide receiver on the team. I think he can produce enough big weeks to sort of push you over the top. Another guy I really like is Jeremy Maclin. Again, he's sort of fallen into that, you know, wide receiver 4 price range, where he was much higher last year, and I don't think he's a different player for any reason, really. I think the Tyreek Hill hype train is a little bit out of hand. You know, when Maclin is healthy, I think he's going to return a nice profit for people. And then the one I really like at quarterback is Cam Newton. I generally don't overweight quarterbacks, or I try not to, because they don't – even the ones with the highest win rates only get up to, you know, maybe 15%, whereas running backs and wide receivers can go over 20%. But, you know, Cam's just 2 years removed from a massive season, and he's going in the 8th, 9th round. And I don't see a lot that has to change for him to bounce back. Even if he bounces halfway back, I think he's going to be a nice value this year. So I'm buying him up now, especially because I think he's going to get more expensive when more people sort of jump into the pool, and you know, we get the more casual drafters in the August time period, tend to like quarterbacks.
And his game is also really well suited to best ball because he's got that, you know, 2 rushing touchdown upside every week. I mean, he, you know, he's one of the rare quarterbacks who can have like a 35-point fantasy week. And now you're able to get him eighth, ninth round, which is where he was going when he had that MVP year a couple of years ago as well. Hey, great interview, Mike. Really appreciate it, man. Awesome thoughts. And I look forward to reading anything else that you are going to be producing regarding MFL 10s for the rest of the offseason. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me. This was great. And I got another article coming on running backs and wide receivers pretty soon. So everybody look out for that. And I really appreciate the time, guys. This is great.
I have no idea who Mike is. This is my buddy Beers that we've been listening to for the last 20 minutes. My buddy Beers is awesome. Check him out on Twitter, at BeersWater, and the hashtag charts on charts on charts. And he writes for RotoViz as well. As always, very, very entertaining, Beers. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Man, really, really impressed. I guess, Evan, my question is, you know, we bring on so many folks, and after every time we have them on, I'm always so impressed. And I feel like, okay, I'm going with what that guy says, or that girl, as the case may be. How do you take all this information and decide sort of which strategies to follow the closest?
I mean, they're all pretty similar. I think that we all kind of have a pretty good general idea of how to construct our rosters. And we're hoping that a couple of people in the leagues that we join will not abide by that roster construction, and therefore we can get an advantage. And then we're just trying to find the guys who stay healthy and the guys who beat their ADP, and that's difficult. And but that's what makes it fun. You know, that's what makes it a challenge. So, I mean, you know, hopefully my rankings are better than my opponents this year, and you know, I can gain a little bit of an edge through roster construction.
Love it. That was really, really interesting. And like any business, if you look at the data, you're going to be more effective and more efficient over time for sure. That'll do it. I am stuffed by today's Fantasy Feast Eating podcast. I mean, I was eating. I was drinking beers. It was awesome. Really appreciate those of you that give us the retweets. He's at Evan Silva. I'm at Ross Tucker NFL. If you're just a Facebook person, facebook.com/RossTuckerNFL is the way to do it. Downloading us multiple times on multiple devices is for superstars only, so don't do that unless you're a legend in your community. iTunes rankings comments, always appreciated. And, of course, if you guys ever want to ask Evan a question, you know what to do. Take advantage of the Amazon banner ad or any of our sponsors over at RossTucker.com. I'm stuffed. We're done.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at RossTucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.
So I've been telling you guys about TrueCar for a while now, and what's amazing about it is as soon as my wife said, honey, I need to get a new car, I said, TrueCar. Because they have the information on anything that's been sold in your area. Think about it. 3 million cars sold, over 13,000 dealers, over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available, average savings of over $3,000 off MSRP. Using TrueCar, you can easily find the car you want. And here's the key. TrueCar will show you what other people in your area paid for the car you want. Now you know what a fair price is, so you can feel confident. Before we even started looking, she was looking at Explorers, Tahoes. I said, hey, look at TrueCar, and you can find out exactly what other people have paid in the area. It is awesome. TrueCar customers are more likely to enjoy a faster buying process when they connect with TrueCar certified dealers. Plus, TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.